The members please vote to signify their presence. Senators Hoffman and Senator Hoffman.
The roll shows 19 members present. Senator Lincoln is excused.
Please stand for the invocation by the chaplain, Father Anastasius E. Wu Oha, from the Cathedral of Nativity.
Respecting our religious differences, I invite you again to join me in these prayers. Lord God, we bring this gathering before you. We pray for this synod, that this synod body will continue to be guided by your wisdom and enriched by your grace. Thank you for your blessing and protection on this state and country, for its leaders and people. We pray for those who are committed to public safety and service, especially the military, as they try to restore peace and order in Iraq. The police, the firefighters, the paramedics, and other emergency workers who put themselves at great risk to protect us. That they not be subjected to unnecessary and overwhelming danger. We renew our appreciation for what they do for us. Mighty God, we ask you to continue to bless our efforts for the good and progress of Alaska, our nation, and the entire world. Amen.
Amen. Senator Taylor, will you lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Will the secretary please certify the journal?
I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 79th legislative day.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move and ask unanimous consent that journals be approved as certified by the Senate Secretary.
Without objection, the journals will be certified, approved as certified by the Secretary. Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Mr. President. I move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer be spread on the journal.
Without objection, the prayer will be spread upon the journal. Brings us down to introduction of guests. No introductions today. Brings us down to messages from the governor.
Message dated April 8th, stating, on this date, I have signed the following bill and am transmitting the engrossed and enrolled copies to the Lieutenant Governor's Office for permanent filing. Senate Bill Number 77, an act naming the William Ransom Wood Centennial Bridge in Fairbanks, Chapter 5, SLA 2003. I have no further messages from the governor.
Messages from the House.
I have no messages from the House.
Communications.
I have no communications.
Reports of standing committees.
The Judiciary Committee considered Senate Bill Number 53, Revoke Driver's License for Fatal Accident, Previous Fiscal Indeterminate and Zero Notes, signing due pass, Senator Seekins, Chair, Senators Ogun, French, Ellis, signing no recommendation, Senator Terrio. The bill has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Judiciary Committee considered Senate Bill Number 59, Permanent Fund Ineligibility for DUI, and recommends it be replaced with a Judiciary Committee substitute. Indeterminate and zero fiscal notes, signing due pass, Senator Seekins, Chair, Senator Ogun, signing no recommendation, Senator Terrio, Senators Ellis, French. The bill has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Health, Education, and Social Services Committee considered Senate Bill Number 84, Teacher Loan Repayment Program, and recommends it be replaced with a HES Committee substitute. New fiscal notes, signing due pass, Senator Dyson, Chair, signing no recommendation, Senator Swilkin, Green. The bill has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Health, Education, and Social Services Committee considered Senate Bill Number 121, Community Schools, previous fiscal note, signing no recommendation, Senator Dyson, Chair, signing due pass, Senators Green, Wilkin, signing do not pass, Senators Guest, Davis. The bill has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Health, Education, and Social Services Committee considered sponsor substitute for Senate Bill Number 154, Nurse Education Loan Repayment Program. New fiscal note, signing due pass, Senator Dyson, Chair, signing no recommendation, Senators Wilkin, Green. The bill has a further referral to the Labor and Commerce Committee. The Health, Education, and Social Services Committee considered Senate Bill Number 157, Inpatient Psychiatric Services, and recommends it be replaced with the HES Committee substitute. New zero fiscal note, signing due pass, Senators Green, Wilkin, co-chairs, Senator Dyson. Signing no recommendation, Senators Guest, Davis. The bill has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Resources Committee considered Senate Bill number 164, Extend Board of Storage Tank Assistance, new Fiscal Note. Signing no recommendation, Senator Ogun, Chair. Signing due pass, Senators Seekins, Ben Stevens, Wagner, Dyson, Lincoln. The bill has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Judiciary Committee considered CS for House Bill number 23, Judiciary, Restitution for Crime Victims, new zero fiscal note. Signing due pass, Senator Seekins, Chair. Signing no recommendation, Senators Terrio, Ogun, French, Ellis. The bill has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The State Affairs Committee considered CS for House Bill number 52, Judiciary, Sex Crime and Pornography Forfeitures, and recommends it be replaced with the State Affairs Senate Committee Substitute, new title. Fiscal note information forthcoming. Signing due pass, Senator Gary Stevens, Chair, Senators Cowdery, Dyson. Signing no recommendation, Senator Guest. The bill has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. Those are all the standing committee reports this morning.
Reports of special committees?
I have no special committee reports.
Introduction of Senate resolutions.
Senate Concurrent Resolution number 9 by the Senate State Affairs Committee, suspending rules 24C, 35, 41B, and 42E, uniform rules of the Alaska State Legislature concerning House Bill number 52, relating to the forfeiture of certain property used in certain crimes.
SCR 9 will be held on the Secretary's desk. In case House Bill 52 does come before us before the full Senate.
I have no more Senate resolutions.
Introduction of Senate bills.
Senate Bill number 181 by Senator Wilkin, an act relating to licensing of certified public accountants.
Labor and Commerce.
Senate Bill number 182 by the Senate Finance Committee, an act relating to a dividend payment to the state made by the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation each fiscal year and providing for an effective date.
Finance Committee.
Those are all the Senate bills for introduction.
Brings us down to consideration of the daily calendar.
Senate Bill number 49 by the Senate Rules Committee by request of the Legislative Council, an act making corrective amendments to the Alaska statutes as recommended by the reviser of statutes and providing for an effective date. The State Affairs Committee considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with a State Affairs Committee substitute. Zero fiscal note, signing due pass, Senator Taylor, Chair. Senators Hoffman, Cowdery, Dyson, Guest. The Judiciary Committee considered the bill and recommended the adoption of the previous State Affairs Committee substitute, previous zero fiscal note, signing due pass, Senator Seekins, Chair, Senator Terrio, signing no recommendations, Senator Ellis, French. There is a State Affairs Committee substitute.
Senator Gary Stevens.
Mr. President, I move the CS for Senate Bill for number 49, State Affairs.
Without objection, the State Affairs CS is moved in lieu of the original bill.
Thank you, Mr. President. Move and ask unanimous consent. The bill be considered gross to advance to third reading and placed on final passage.
Without objection, seeing as how we have no amendments, the bill will advance to a third reading.
CS for Senate Bill number 49, State Affairs, an act making corrective amendments to the Alaska statutes as recommended by the reviser of statutes and providing for an effective date.
We are in third reading. Is there debate? Seeing no debate, the question before the Senate is, shall committee substitute for Senate Bill 49, State Affairs, pass the Senate. Members may proceed to vote. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary will tally the roll.
19 yeas, 0 nays.
So by a voter, 19 yeas, 0 nays. Committee substitute for Senate Bill 49, State Affairs, has passed the Senate. Madam Secretary. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move and ask unanimous consent to vote on final passage be considered the vote for the effective date clause.
Without objection, the vote on final passage will be considered the vote on the effective date clause.
Senate Bill number 115 by the Senate Rules Committee by request of the Governor, an act allowing expenses of the Correctional Industries Program that may be financed from the Correctional Industries Fund to include the salaries and benefits of state employees. The State Affairs Committee considered the bill, previous fiscal note, signing due pass, Senator Gary Stevens, Chair, Senators Cowdery, Dyson. Signing no recommendations, Senators Hoffman, Guest. The Finance Committee considered the bill, previous fiscal note, signing due pass, Senators Green, Wilkin, co-chairs, Senators Taylor, Bundy, Ben Stevens. Signing no recommendation, Senator Olson. I have one title amendment by Senator Ben Stevens.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move amendment number one.
There is objections. Mr. Minority Leader.
Can we have an ease, please?
Brief at ease. I come back to order, please. Mr. Minority Leader.
Mr. President, I appreciate the time to consider the amendment. I would just ask the Majority Leader to explain why the non-substantive amendment is necessary.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. For the members of the body, this was alerted to me by, it's just a drafting error in the title. The text of the body of the bill, as you can see on line 13, has an effective date, but on the original bill, there is no effective date clause in the title. Therefore, it's just a drafting error, and it's request the addition to add it into the title. There's no substantive change to the bill. It's just a technicality. Thank you.
Is the objection maintained? Seeing no objection, then amendment number one is adopted. Mr. Minority Leader.
And Mr. President, I have a question that could possibly lead to an amendment here in second reading. Can someone who's more familiar with the bill tell me how this correctional industries program change the effect of this bill on the budget of that program would affect the state-owned and state-subsidized meat packing plant?
Senator Bundy.
Thank you, Mr. President. Our attempt to answer the general fund savings total is $960,000 for FY04, and of the eight correctional industry businesses, the McKinley meat packing is related to them only in that they get some support through the Department of Agriculture.
Thank you. Senator Green.
Yeah, there are no Department of Correction funds going to the Mount McKinley meat packing plant.
Okay, do we have any further amendments?
I have no further amendments.
Okay, Mr. Minority Leader.
Mr. President, on the previous point, it was my understanding that it's prisoners that work at the state-owned and state-subsidized meatpacking plant, and that this bill would change the program such that the 14 employees of the Correctional Industries Program would need to be, their salaries, if they were to be retained, would have to be paid out of the profits of the Correctional Industries Program. There would no longer be a general fund commitment to the program. The meatpacking plant does not produce a profit. That's why no one will take it off our hands and buy it from us. I've long maintained that it's a totally inappropriate function of government to own and operate a meatpacking plant. I wasn't sure if everyone in the body was aware that we own a meatpacking plant and subsidize it. I still have significant questions about how this bill will change the correctional industries program, if such a program will exist in the future practically because of this change, and the impact on the prisoners, or the impact on the program because of the way the prisoners are paid at the meatpacking plant.
Senator Bundy.
Thank you, Mr. President. Information I get from the administration is that there are only three prisoner employees at Mount McKinley meat, and they are paid through the DNR budget. It doesn't relate to the correctional industries proposal before us. And, when it's appropriate, I can speak further about the bill.
Thank you. Okay. If we have no further amendments, we're going to carry forward Senate Bill 115 to third reading on our next calendar. Madam Secretary.
House Bill number 71 by the House State Affairs Committee. No, we're in third, I'm sorry. No, we're in third. House Bill number 71 by the House State Affairs Committee, an act extending the termination date of the Board of Certified Direct Entry Midwives.
We are in third.
No, we aren't. Are we?
Oh, that's House Bill. Okay, I'm sorry.
The Finance Committee considered House Bill number 71 and recommends it be replaced with the Finance Senate Committee substitute, previous fiscal notes, signing due pass, Senators Wilkin, Green, co-chairs, Senators Hoffman, Bundy, Ben Stevens, Taylor. There is a Finance Committee substitute.
Senator Wilkin.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Senate Finance Committee substitute be considered in lieu of the original bill.
There is objection, Mr. Minority.
Can we have an explanation of the change, please?
Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Mr. President. If you'll look at page 1, line 7,
We added to that section, go to page 2, you'll see the words, the board may require an applicant to pass an examination about Alaska laws that are applicable to the profession of direct entry midwives. This recommendation on behalf of the Senate Finance Committee comports with page 11 of legislative budget and audit recommendations.
Is the objection maintained? Seeing none, the Senate Finance CS will be adopted in lieu of the original bill. Do we have any amendments?
I have no amendments.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate concurrent resolution number 7 be taken up as a special order of business at this time.
Senate concurrent resolution. Madam Secretary. Can we take a brief recess? Would the Senate come back to order, please? We have before us Senate concurrent resolution number 7, which is affixed to House Bill 71 because of the title change. So we do need to take a vote on this concurrent resolution. Is there debate or are there questions? Seeing none, the question before us then is, shall Senate concurrent resolution number 7 pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary will tally the roll.
19 yeas, 0 nays.
By a vote of 19 yeas, 0 nays, Senate concurrent resolution 7 has passed. That brings us now. Now, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. At this time, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Senate Committee substitute for House Bill 71 be engrossed, advanced to third reading, placed on final passage.
Without objection, the bill will advance to third reading.
Senate CS for House Bill number 71, Finance. An act extending the termination date of the Board of Certified Direct Entry Midwives and relating to the regulation of certified direct entry midwives.
We are in third reading. Is there a debate? Senator Taylor.
Just a couple brief comments. I remember when we initiated this program, and I'm so pleased that now that we have finally come up to the annual review caused by the sunsetting legislation, that we've had an opportunity to go back with the leaders within this program and with our own Alaska legislature's budget and audit committee on their review. And I think we now have if there's something that needs to be said, I think it's this. This has been an excellent program. It has worked well. It's something that I think we all had questions at the time that this passed as to how it would work and whether it would work well, especially with the inherent conflicts that existed with the medical community and others at the time. And I'm pleased to see this come before us because the report is it's been win-win on all sides. It has actually reduced medical costs, and it has also provided a level of service and a different viable opportunity for Alaskans that did not exist before, and a level of certification and credibility is going to be enhanced through the amendment put on by the Finance Committee. So all in all, I think it's a win-win situation and one that I've been proud to participate in. For once, we did something I think that was very good and has worked out well.
Thank you. Is there any further debate? Seeing none, the question before the Senate is, shall Senate Committee substitute for House Bill 71, Finance, pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary will tally the roll.
19 yeas, 0 nays.
So by a vote of 19 yeas, 0 nays, Senate Committee substitute for House Bill 71, Finance, has passed the Senate. Mr. Minority Leader.
At ease, please.
Would the Senate come back to order, please? Madam Secretary. Oh, Senator Green.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm pleased to introduce two guest pages. May we move back to the calendar, to the introduction of guests, please?
Without objection, we'll go back to introduction of guests.
Thank you. I'm pleased to introduce two guest pages today. They're from the Matsu Borough. They happen to be going to one of the original charter schools in the Matsu Borough School District, the Academy School. On my left is Jenna Malone. Jenna is a student at Academy Charter School, and she's from Palmer. And behind me is Kirsten Doms, who's from Wasilla, and is also a student at Charter. If you would help me welcome them.
Okay, that takes us back down to the daily calendar.
CS for Senate Bill number 105, Hess, by the Senate Health, Education, and Social Services Committee, an act relating to eligibility requirements for medical assistance for certain children, pregnant women, and persons in a medical or intermediate care facility and providing for an effective date.
We are in third reading. Senator Wilker.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that we return to second reading for purposes of a specific amendment, that being amendment number one.
Without objection, we will go back to second reading. Senator Wilkin.
Mr. President, move amendment number one.
There is objection. Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Mr. President. It helps to look at page four of the legislation and a little, the effect of the amendment is to correct a drafting error. Look at page four, you'll see that line seven through line 19 is the Denali Kid Care section of the bill. Bottom of page four, line 27 through page five, line seven is the pregnant woman section of the bill. The numbers that you see there, for instance, the 2489 in the bill before you, those are FY02, 200% poverty level numbers. They should have been FY03, 200% poverty level. So that was one error, but it was compounded in the Hess Committee. My amendment in the Hess Committee was meant to be applied to both the Denali Kid Care and the pregnant women. And so it wasn't picked up in the Hess Committee amendment. What this amendment does, if accepted, would make the bill then show 175% federal poverty level at the FY03 levels. I should note that the fiscal note reflects the amendment, as everyone, as it left the Hess Committee, thought that that was the intent of the Hess Committee actions. So that's the amendment. I commend it to your consideration.
Is the objection maintained? Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. How many pregnant women are you negatively affecting with this amendment, if passed?
Senator Wilkin.
That question was asked yesterday, Mr. President, asked yesterday, and I have some notes here. I don't know how many are affected by the amendment itself. I can tell you that the bill itself has an effect starting on July 1st. Testimony was somewhere between 60 and 1,345. I should tell you that the bill, as it sits, will not cut anybody off from coverage. Anyone that is enrolled in the program on June 30th, if a pregnant woman, will be carried through to term with the coverage. Any person that is enrolled as of June 30th as a Denali Kid Care recipient will have 6 months to wind down and find other ways to pay their medical bills. The population that's covered is about 28,000 people. This has the potential, at the worst, to be about 1,300. That's about 4% of the population would be affected by this legislation.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. President. The fiscal note that we have provided and the co-chairman has stated, it applies to the amendment, states that pregnant women in 04, there would be 31 additional women that would be not eligible, and this would drastically grow through 09 in 85 to 80, in 06 to 127, in 08 to 219, and by 09, the number of pregnant women that would be ineligible by this program would be 263.
Thank you. We do have a motion to for passage of amendment number one. There is objection. Is there further debate on that question? Seeing none, the question before the Senate is, shall amendment number one pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary will tally the roll.
12 yeas, 7 nays.
So amendment number one has passed the Senate. It takes us back into third reading. Is the debate under third reading? Senator Guess. Senator Guess.
Thank you, Mr. President. I was trying to do what my mother taught me. I think we all know, because of the debate yesterday and today, what this bill does. And I know I'm not going to change anyone's mind. I at least learned that from my experience in the other body. But I did want to say a couple things in how we think about public policy. And for those of you that keep asking me why I'm a Democrat, I think maybe you'll find it out a little bit more. So I just want to touch on three things. One is the whole 200%, 175% of poverty. That's a lot of money. So I did a little calculation this morning on this new bill. $3,355 a month for a family of four. If we assume with Social Security and with taxes, about 20% rate. I took my paycheck from the state to try to figure out how much taxes that would be. That's $2,684 to run a household a month. I then probably, I won't make that assumption, I then took my, I live in a very modest home in a very modest neighborhood, took my rent, electric, phone, not internet, gas, water, and garbage, which right now is $1,250, and is, I think, a pretty good, accurate, give or take, amount of money. So that left a family of four with $1,434. And I'll just leave that with people as we start talking about how much people can afford. That's not gas. That's not an insurance payment for a car. It's not groceries. Second, interestingly enough, I got an email from a pastor in my neighborhood, and with your permission, I'd like to just read a few paragraphs.
Without objection.
My family has health insurance, but we do not have maternity care. The extra coverage is not available. And if it were, it would probably be prohibitively expensive. Yet we can't afford to pay for a pregnancy out of pocket. The lowest estimates we have gotten from the area hospital is $10,000 for a normal delivery. In the past year, my wife has been pregnant twice. Sadly, she miscarried both times. We are grateful for Denali Kid Care. Because of my income, we were able to qualify. And this is, again, a pastor. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have taken off my glasses. While we don't have the joy of a new baby in our arms, we also don't have the stress of the $1,000 in medical bills that came with insuring treatment and surgeries. Should we become pregnant again and deliver a healthy baby, we hope that Kid Care will be available to help with some of the expenses. While some say 200% of poverty level is far too high, perhaps they can be reminded of the incredibly high cost of medical care in Alaska. You know, it's interesting because the editorial page of the Daily News got it wrong. We're not talking about covering a family of four. We're talking about covering children and pregnant women. And interestingly enough, we know in research what happens when we don't cover those. We all know about what happens when we don't cover children and the extra costs that incur. I'd like to, though, remind people about pregnant women. I mean, this is the one that especially given that you can't buy health insurance. I've heard this from many of my friends for pregnancy. My first research, Mr. President, that I ever did was on the determinants of neonatal mortality in Minnesota from 1982 to 1987. Started me off on this great wonk journey. But one of the things we know is that without health, the biggest cause of neonatal mortality is low birth weight. And one of the biggest causes of low birth weight is not having the proper prenatal care, not having the proper medical expenses. We also know the relationship between health care and the termination of pregnancies. So I looked at these numbers, and I'll just take the past fiscal note, because the amendment in the fiscal note, we're going to, at the most savings to the state, $3 million, and 263 women would be ineligible for $3 million. Just 1% of that at a low birth weight baby, that's two babies, that takes up that $3 million. So although I appreciate cost containment, I guess as an economist, I think it's short-sighted. I think I can agree to disagree at what level is appropriate and what hourly wage and what poverty, but I think when we make decisions like this in policy, we're just so short-sighted, because it's going to come out at the other end, and that's at the low rate. So with that, I hope I didn't take up too much of everyone's time, but I thought it was important to state. Thank you.
Thank you. Further debate. Senator Green.
Chairman, Mr. President, just a couple of comments. One of the things that I forget to include in my translation or thinking on Denali Kid Care and some of the programs, and when we talk about the federal poverty level, that Alaska does operate at an enhanced rate. So when we compare to other states, we are advantaged in the dollar amount that comes in and the final figure. So, and then in comparing us to other states, I was looking through the number of enrollees, and the data is a couple of years old. And according to these figures, Alaska, at 600,000 population, has more enrollees in Denali KidCare than 14 or 15 other states. We are not at the top on some of the percentages, but we are certainly exceed most states in the way we stack up on both the CHIPS, or the Denali KidCare, and the Medicaid upper limit for pregnant women. And I think we've had a very generous program. And one of the things to bear in mind that insurance, when we talk about the purchase of insurance or coverage, or health coverage, for our children, that's a very different calculation than an insurance calculation for the general population. And that coverage is available much more readily. And I think we always need to say that our state should be encouraging people in whatever way we can, that people be privately insured and not include them in a Medicaid program. I think that's a gift that they may not want to keep getting. It's not the way to start the programs for a person's responsible coverage of the family and the possible expenses and things that they're going to incur. And I think it's in planning. As a senator from East Anchorage said, as she calculates out what it costs her to live, that's certainly one of the calculations that I would hope people would consider as a necessity and not have the inclination to say that the state will pick this up if I don't take care of this. And I think we are still very, very generous with the rates that we've proposed.
Further debate? Senator Wilken.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm glad that Senator before me spoke of the word generous, because that's the word that continues to come up when we talk about these very programs. If you ask the Fairbanksan on the street and you say to them, you know, the state pays for direct medical payments from the state to the doctor for some kids that need it, or you pay for some pregnant women that need it directly from the state to the doctor. And they say, well, yeah, probably state ought to do that. Probably, you know, that's, they do it. And they say, well, let me tell you, let me show you what the eligibility levels are for that. And that's what this table is that we've referred to. And I just keep using the word generous, and I'll explain why. The amendment that I sponsored in the HES committee and was supported rolls the program back a bit. It eliminates the potential of about 4% of those that may apply starting on July 1st. You know, if you had an income of $22,000 a year, you had a job that was about $10 an hour, you would qualify today if you were just one. If you had a family of four, you'd have a $22 an hour job, and you would qualify. If you had a family of eight, you'd have a $37 an hour job, and you'd qualify. Now, I think Fairbanks would say to me, "Ooh, well, that's generous. I've got a 25 an hour job, and I didn't know I could get that. I didn't know that. That's generous." I agree with them. So how much did we cut it back? Well, we could have gone back to 133 or 150, but we didn't. I thought it was reasonable and support the governor and saying, let's lock the numbers in so we don't have this entitlement, this inflation, and CPI stuff that gets everybody in trouble. Let's roll it back. So the amendment was to roll it back to 175, and that's what the bill is based on. So what does 175 mean? If you're one person, you have a $9.50 an hour job. No insurance, probably need some help. If you have a family of four, you're making a little over $40,000 a year, almost $20 an hour. I think that's appropriate for the state to help at that maximum. Or if you have a family of eight, you're at $67,000 a year as income. These do not include the permanent fund dividend, so you can add on $1,000 or $5,000 or $8,000, depending on what group you happen to be in. So, you know, Mr. President, we've had information that we've had trouble getting before, but under the new administration we have it, and there's a track record that tells you that We've got to do something about this Medicaid issue that is just eating us alive in our budget. If you look at Medicaid-eligible children and costs starting in 1999, we had 38,000 people in FY99. In 2004, the projection is 65,000. The cost in 99 was $124 million. The cost today is $306 million. In 5 years, we've gone from $124 million to $306 million. If we look at Medicaid totals in our budget starting in FY99, we had eligibles in 99 of 65,000 people. 5 years later, 96,000 people. But the cost is really what should scare us and tell us why we should do cost containment measures such as embodied in Senate Bill 105. Average monthly cost in FY99, $387 million. FY04, 5 years later, $809 million. In 5 years, it's gone from $386 million to $809 million. That's a growth that, Mr. President, we simply can't afford. And I'm not one to just chop everybody off and say no more. We need to make rational plans that pass the pain to those that can best afford it. And this bill does that. This is a reasonable plan that affects a few people, but it does cost containment for the benefit of the people of Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Davis.
Thank you, Mr. President. Addressing what the previous speaker just spoke of, that we need to be doing cost containment, I agree that we should. But the Genelli Kid Care is a program that's helping women, children, families, and it is an exemplary program. It has achieved national acclaim. We have received extra money from the federal government because some states did not use all their allotments, and because our program was working so well, we were able to get funding to boost that program. And it's my understanding, based upon what I read in an article just recently, that we will be receiving money this year based upon that. Now, we might have this great program this year, 2003, but we won't have it later, because what we have done now is locked in those numbers, not even though he's saying at the 175%. Now, what it has done is locking the figures in there. The $2,000-and-some figure, regardless of what inflation is, whatever happens, it will continue to stay there unless we make a change. And so we could drop down from 175 to 150, or we could go even lower than that. But the sad thing about this is that this bill was introduced, came to us from the governor's office. And the recommendation is that we lock those numbers in at the 200% level by putting that amount of money within the statutes, which we have not been doing. And we choose as a body to ignore that. And it was said, yes, those figures are high. It's a great program. We don't want to water the program down. We want to slow the growth of the program, and we'll leave it where it is now. Others saw that as a great opportunity to water the program down. It didn't just happen with that bill, because before us in years past, people have tried to lower the standards for Genelli Kid Care. I think we should take in consideration the bill the way it was when we got it, and be satisfied to do it at that level. But apparently, at this point, we don't have the votes to do that. But I just want to bring it to your attention. This is not something that has been thrown on us that we have to do. It is something that we chose to do, because the governor's numbers and advice that came from the commissioner was that we accept the numbers that was given at the 200% level.
Senator Elton.
Thanks, Mr. President. I feel somewhat awkward even debating this, because to me, what we're talking about is a concept. I mean, my family has never had to seek assistance for medical care, and I guess I'd suggest that may be the case for most of the people here on the floor that are going to be voting on the bill today. It certainly wasn't a concept to the minister that we heard from when the member from Anchorage spoke to the bill. I think the senator from Fairbanks, who sponsored the amendment in committee and introduced the concept of this governor's bill, spoke very well to kind of the bottom line issues, to the dollar issues. I guess if we focus just on those dollar issues, it may seem somewhat, this bill may seem somewhat compelling, although I'd suggest that when the member from Anchorage spoke and talked about potential costs if we don't provide good prenatal care, I think that she made a point that this may not be a savings at all. But I do want to suggest, I agree with the member from Fairbanks, that this governor has brought a new attitude toward the budget process. I've been surprised, and I think many of us have been surprised, at the cuts that he has suggested. I've been surprised at the revenues that he has suggested. And I would just remind the body that when we vote on this, I mean, it was the governor's good judgment backed up by the judgment of the professionals in the Department of Health and Social Services, people who administer the program, to whom this is not a concept like it is to me and to many others, they all suggested something less draconian than we're voting on today. And that suggestion is coming from somebody who I have absolutely no doubt recognizes the value of every nickel and dime in the budget that he presented and in the bills that he has presented. So for those of us to whom this is a concept, I mean, I just remind them that the governor has been counting nickels and dimes, and he doesn't want to go this deep. And I don't think that we should either, so I would recommend a no vote.
Senator French.
Thank you, Mr. President. We're taking a big step backward here today. We are backing off a 200% eligibility level and going to a much lower level. By doing that, we're going to reduce the availability of Denali Kid Care to a certain number of our population. We should be proud that we have in the past funded this at that level, and we should be proud to continue to fund it at the same level. I have a mild case of conjunctivitis right now, and I had to go see the doctor this morning. I waited an hour and a half out at Juno Urgent Care to see a doctor for about 5 minutes and to get a small bottle of drops I need to cure my conjunctivitis. It cost me $105 to get that done this morning. And so when you talk about how much the price of this program has risen over the years, you don't blame that on the people who need health care coverage. You blame it on the cost and the rising cost of medical care. If it costs $10 for these drops, or $50 or $100, you need the drops to cure the problem in your eye, and so you pay the money. But if you don't have coverage and you don't have $100, you won't do it. And you'll just wait and watch your child get sicker and sicker in the eye until finally you take that child to the emergency room where a $100 problem gets fixed for 4 or 5 times that amount. So I suggest that we're being penny wise and pound foolish, and I suggest that we vote against this bill and vote for a bill that would preserve the amounts that we've honored in the past. In closing, I'll say that when I ran for this job, I ran against a person who had been here for a long time, and we clashed on just about every single issue you can imagine, except for this one. At a public forum, both of us pledged to maintain Denali Kid Care at a 200% eligibility level. And I'm going to honor that promise today by voting against this bill.
Thank you. Further debate? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I rise up in objection to this particular piece of legislation. First of all, I'd like to say that the amendment that we adopted prior was an amendment that made a bad bill worse. And I would like to say that that by changing the program where that doesn't keep up with inflation, everyone is well aware of the problems that we're having with the foundation formula. And the sponsor of the the amendment that had passed has always been one of the strong supporters for education. And now, if this bill proceeds, as I assume it will, 5 years... But I would like to come up with some of the figures that the senator from East Anchorage said, that a pregnancy costs about $10,000. And then we say that the amounts that we have here are fair. But what happens with, say, a family of two that earns $2,489 a month on this program? Well, basically, we're going to have to take 4 months out of his income, his and her income, in order to pay for the pregnancy. So that instead of having 12 months of income now on a yearly basis, they're going to have to live on 8 months. Does this sound fair and beyond the scope of what Alaskans can provide as assistance? I would say no. But when you talk about the dollar amounts, you know, these are expenses that don't, or the majority of us don't occur on an annual basis or even once every other year. You know, most families in the United States and in Alaska have one or two children. So these are expenses that are extraordinary, to say the least. And it is in these times that I think that the families that we're talking about need the additional dollars so that they can prepare and buy the necessary additional clothing, bedding, additional food supplies, and other things that are required when a family enjoys the coming of an additional person in their lives. But you know, going back to even a family of four making $3,772, you know, that is 3 months' income. So, you know, if you, as an individual, were living on these wages, where would you cut? You know, that would be a family of four, $3,700, that's over $10,000 that you would have to come up with on an annual basis. So, although, on the face of it, the comments that this is a generous program may be true, and if these were benefits that were received on an annual basis, that may also be true. But the benefits for assisting these pregnant women in the time when it is so a joyous thing to provide this undue financial burden, I think is something that we as a state should not go to. You know, and I was traveling when the bill was passed out of the Hess Committee, and I was a little bit shocked when I read the headlines. You know, it says that the panel lops off kid care families. You know, the next headline, if this happens, it's going to be the Senate lops off the kid care families. You know, and it talks about $2 million that we are tightening our belts on. You know, I'm not here to say that this changes don't have to be made. You know, I believe that the state of Alaska is facing some crucial and tough times, and we do have a deficit. But and those deficits that we're facing are very, very drastic, and I think all people in Alaska need to tighten their belts and share the burden. But here we're concentrating on in the case of Title 21 children, the families of 519 in 2009. We're concentrating those on some of the poorest families of the state. And we should be looking at other ways that we can tighten our belts and other ways that we can increase the revenues and not try to balance the state's budget on the pregnant women and the poor children of the state.
Thank you. Further debate? Senator Bundy.
Thank you, Mr. President. Much has been said of the ultimate cost of this issue before us. And though it's not a popular, widely held opinion, it's my concern that in a relatively near future, the average Alaskan is going to have to reach in their pocket and provide revenues, taxes to the state. That, to me, is the ultimate cost of this program, and one that should weigh very, very heavily on us. I'm not sure we're balancing the budget on the backs of a small group, but what we may be attempting to do is pay for some on the backs of those who just make a few dollars more than those who qualify for this, because they indeed will be in the future very likely the taxpayers that will have to support a program that at this point, if we don't change it, is $800 million and in the near future will be much more.
Further debate. Senator Olson.
Mr. President, can I have an amendment, please?
Debating in the first place whether or not to provide an additional or enhanced or even a continuing, depending upon which adjective you want to use, level of health care involving pregnancy. That's a tough thing to debate, isn't it? I mean, motherhood and apple pie, isn't that the whole thing about politics, I guess? But, you know, I think it's incredible to even be arguing about this one. The state has been providing levels of care based on diagnoses. We've had huge debates on this floor about whether or not breast cancer should be provided with additional assistance. We have a program here that provides additional assistance from the state, fully paid for, I might add, as my colleague from Fairbanks said, check goes straight from the state to the doctor if you fall within certain categories. Most of the working people in my district probably fall within, easily, the current levels that we're talking about. Because what we're really talking about is 250% of the federal poverty level. Everybody keeps using 200% this, 200% that. Wrong. Alaska has 25% enhancement. All of our federal employees up here get a 25% increase in their paycheck because, quote, they're living in Alaska. Incredibly, everybody on this floor and the other body, if you look at your own paycheck coming from this place, you're well within it, folks. You're on the poverty level. If that's your income for the year, you qualify. And then we had a discussion about, well, if in fact a young couple, she's now pregnant, and then we use the numbers for a family of two. Wrong. That isn't what the bill does. That isn't what the law does. The law says once that couple finds that they're pregnant, they're now a family of three. So you have to look to the numbers for a family of three. Once you look to those numbers, then you have to look to 250%, I guess it is, or 225%, however you figure that federal 25% over the top thing, which all of a sudden starts taking you up to numbers like 37,000, 40-some thousand, 50-some thousand a year annualized income. But here's the real kicker. Why would anybody in that bracket, in that income bracket, ever go buy insurance for this diagnosis? They wouldn't. It's stupid. Because first off, under our state program, there's no asset test. You could have that amount of income, but you could own your house, you could own your car, you could have all kinds of other assets and money in the bank. It's only based on, quote, income. Well, what a fascinating deal. All of us qualify. Most of the group probably aren't within a child-bearing age, although I'm informed by my colleague from Fairbanks that a lady age 65 just gave birth in India yesterday. So that frightens me. You know, I'm going to have a talk with Kay about that when I get home. But on top of that, think about this one. You're all covered by the state medical program. God bless you. It's the best benefit we certainly get for doing this job. But you got a copay on that. When you go in, you've got to pay. You've got to have a little deductible in there that you pay, right? None of these people have any copay. None of them have any, quote, deductible. It's 100% pay. You walk in, everything's taken care of, you sign the forms, you're done. Why would anybody within that category, roughly husband and wife, below $40,000 a year annualized income, why would they ever buy insurance for their children or for a pregnancy? Well, they wouldn't, because the state's going to be generous enough to pay for it. So we're only going to penalize, I guess, and deny coverage to those people above those levels, those elevated levels of income. I look at those questions, and I have to say generous is hardly the word. We are very generous in this state, and generous to the place where nobody would be buying this type of coverage that I would consider middle-class Alaskan working family. Why would they? I'm concerned, too, about the analogy my colleague gave me about the minister in Anchorage. I don't think ministers pay taxes. At least as far as I know, they don't, do they? The church sure doesn't. But I'm concerned that
you would have to be quite a ways above the annualized income of everybody in this room before you wouldn't qualify. So I think we find ourselves in the same bucket that person's in, I guess. But at least down here, you've got to pay some copay when you go in to see them. When my colleague went to the doctor this morning, he's going to have to take money out of his back pocket and pay a portion of that hospital bill, or that emergency room bill, I guess it was. But probably the most overwhelming part, if you want to look at the big picture on this whole issue, is in just the last 5 years, our budget has gone up by over $500 million on Medicaid. That's more than the entire existing deficit right now, if depending on how you calculate income and what you're going to guess oil's going to be next year. That's at least awfully close to the existing state deficit today is just in that one program. And the amount of reduction being made here is so insignificant as almost to be laughable when you look at the total percentage that's going down. Yes, my colleague from Anchorage indicated we were locking numbers in. We're locking some of the most generous numbers in the entire United States into place. And yes, over time, inflation will have and rising cost of medical care will have an impact on that. Right now, we've got a state budget that's $500 million more than we can afford. I think we have to continue to make reductions. And as painful as the subjects may be, because they are literally wrapped in motherhood and apple pie, I think we still have to address those subjects. And I personally don't understand why we are above the federal requirements, which are 133% plus 25%, remember, each time, of inflation. I don't understand why we're above it when that's the basis upon which most other states are currently doing it. We're considering some very draconian cuts in some other areas around here. Entire departments are seeing impacts. We're looking at other agencies, Alaska Science and Tech, they go away completely. We're looking at some pretty draconian things. And I consider this one to be very, very slight when it comes to the reduction level, and we're only reducing the group that are going to be qualified. If it were the people on this floor that were somehow going to be benefited by this, I'd have to say, well, we had a conflict of interest. You'd have to almost double your pay on this floor right now before you would get yourself high enough to be outside of this bracket. I think that's shocking.
Further debate. Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. President. I lend my voice to the folks encouraging members of the body to vote no on this bill today. I'm asking folks to save Denali KidCare as it currently exists, and for folks that would become eligible in the future, the kids that would need this program. And I'm begging my colleagues not to make it more difficult for women to carry their pregnancies to term. So for the folks at home especially, I think we need to maybe set in historical context what Denali KidCare is and how it came to be. As most of us know, it is a program providing health insurance, coverage for uninsured children and for pregnant women who meet certain income guidelines. It was part of Governor Tony Noel's Smart Start program to provide health care for kids and working families who have no health insurance otherwise. The federal government pays 70% of the costs, meaning for every dollar spent, the state has a contribution of 30 cents. 30 cents on the dollar, and if I'm not mistaken, our entire congressional delegation supported the federal law that allowed states to offer this to uninsured children and pregnant women. The comment was made about generous, and I guess I could say you throw in the word stingy into the debate, but on the point of the 200% of poverty as the eligibility level, I find myself in agreement with Governor Murkowski. I don't know if we have a good cop, bad cop situation going on with this bill. Efforts by the majority to make the governor look more reasonable on this legislation, I don't know. But I take the Commissioner of Health and Social Services at his word. I take the governor at his word that 200% of poverty eligibility for Denali KidCare is the right level. I know there are folks, Mr. President, in this body and in the other body who've tried to kill off Denali KidCare with legislation, who've tried to roll back, who've looked for opportunities for amendments to roll back Denali KidCare. It has been a prized goal of a number of members for some time now, for whatever reason. But for 8 years, we had a governor that would have vetoed such a bill if it had come to him, so people gave up because they thought it was not worth the trouble and the bad publicity, because the governor had threatened to veto any changes in the Denali KidCare program. So this is not just an effort that originated this year. This has been going on for some time, because I know a lot of folks philosophically are opposed to any kind of public interference or participation or involvement in the private insurance market. I've been waiting my entire lifetime for the private insurance market to reasonably cover and have access to affordable health insurance for American families. The U.S. Congress decided that wasn't likely to happen, was unwilling to take the measures necessary to change the whole system, so they adopted a strategy of incrementalism. And Republicans and Democrats together in the U.S. Congress, and in a previous iteration or the creation of Denali KidCare, people came together in a bipartisan way and said, okay, we can't agree on a larger change or reform in the system, but we're going to take care of kids. And we're not going to be stingy about it. We're going to be reasonable about it. And I think the Governor Murkowski position of 200% of poverty is a reasonable position. And I encourage him to stand up for what he told us he believes. Mr. President, it has been pointed out that legislators here have their state-paid health insurance. It is one of the best benefits we receive for our public service, or in the line of our public service, and we paid for people's severe and acute life-threatening situations. We've paid for routine health insurance for legislators as a state. And I think that Denali KidCare is a worthwhile investment. Some people have mentioned to me that they think because legislators are covered and that maybe we're out of touch with the economic pressures on average families in the state. That may be somewhat true with some of the members of the body. Mr. President, I'd point out that Denali KidCare is an award-winning program. It's well thought of across the country. It's been one of the most successful among the states. And we have benefited from programs that weren't so great in other states and have been able to use that to the benefit of Alaskan children and pregnant women, those extra funds. The success of the Denali KidCare program has made a significant statistical impact in improving the health of pregnant women and children in Alaska, those birth outcomes, fewer low-weight babies. We have actually risen in those report cards that cause concern when the press reports Alaska's low standing in the past on low birth weight babies and the other statistical measures of how we stack up against Louisiana or Mississippi. Denali KidCare has made an improvement and should continue to make an improvement. We should think that is a positive thing for Alaska not to be at the bottom, but to be at the top in terms of a reasonable program and a program that increases our health, improves our health statistics. Access to health insurance impacts children's health. It's undeniable. Public health research is noteworthy. Uninsured children who need medical and surgical care are four times more likely to go without that care they need than uninsured children with the same health needs. And when they do get the care, they are sicker and more likely to be seen in the expensive emergency room situation. You get all the cost shifting that goes on in the medical community, the healthcare industry, because of charity care and uncompensated care. Uninsured children are 4.5 times more likely to do without needed prescription and eyeglasses. Pretty hard to learn in school when you don't have your eyeglasses. And 5 times more likely to be unable to receive needed dental care, which can become acute. Uninsured children are 1.5 times more likely to arrive to kindergarten without the required immunizations and 8 times more likely to not have had a recent well child visit. Uninsured pregnant women are less likely to receive prenatal care, placing them at risk to deliver early, low birth weight babies, and at the greatest risk for fetal maternal death. Those statistics and those points should be of concern to all of us. Mr. President, I was contacted this morning by a fellow by email, and I'm glad I checked my email this morning before this debate, because he told me that he considers himself a strong conservative, but is dismayed by Senate Bill 105. He was dismayed by the original version. I would expect he's more dismayed by the version before us today with the amendment that was adopted regarding pregnant women. He thinks it's unfair to balance the budget on the backs of those who can least afford it, and I'm afraid that Senate Bill 105 does just that. His words, not mine. Mr. President, finally, I was visited a few weeks back from the Bridges campaign for mental health services. I was in town lobbying the legislature relating to the mental health trust budget. And a woman came by. She was someone that she said she considered herself middle class. Her husband had a good job. She stayed at home with several of their children and one child in particular who had mental health needs. And, of course, their search for private market health insurance was not fruitful. They couldn't find anybody to cover them, or if they could, it was at such an astronomical cost. And there is no parity, as you know, between mental health issues and physical health issues and in the way plans are structured and the way government programs are structured as well. And she went through her budget for me, and it was a painful process, and she was emotional and upset and crying through the whole thing about sharing with almost a total stranger, but her elected official, their family budget in order to convince me that they were not goofing off and spending all their money on DVD rentals or doing any kind of irresponsible thing in terms of their family budget. And she talked me through several of the other folks that she's met who are beneficiaries of Denali KidCare. And she convinced me that, and I have no question of the sincerity of the folks who stand here and talk about the income levels, and doesn't that sound really generous to a middle-class family to be covered by Denali KidCare? But she went through her budget and told me that because of the child's mental health condition, she could not go into the workplace. I think many of us have wanted to encourage, especially the folks who talk about family values, have wanted to encourage folks, one of the parent, to be home with children when the children are most in need in their developmental stages. And this woman felt like she was being a good mother. By being at home, the husband was working, making a decent job. But she said, I do not know where we would be as a family without Denali Kid Care. And she had come to the Senate HES Committee meetings. And she had heard various members of the committee talk about the income guidelines and the family of four and what are these people spending their money on compared to going out and buying health insurance. And she wanted me to make the point that they couldn't buy health insurance. And Denali Kid Care is their lifeline. I believed her. I believed that she was not being irresponsible with her family budget. And there are many, many Alaskans like that. So, Mr. President, I would appeal to the body to not take the step back, backward, not roll back Denali Kid Care, stick with the governor on the 200% of poverty eligibility level, and think about the real health concerns of Alaskans. This is a program to be proud of, not one to denigrate or to call overly generous when it is a lifeline for many Alaskan families. Thank you.
Thank you. Further debate, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. When we came to this point on the vote on this bill, I had to ask myself, how did we get to where we are? So I went back to look at what happened before House Bill 369 was passed on and became law on July 1st, 1998, which essentially put into play this program. And before that time, Mr. President, we are at 133% of the federal poverty level for pregnant women, regardless of assets. For children through the age of 5 with incomes at 133% of poverty level, regardless of assets, they were covered. And children between the ages of 6 and 18, born after 1983, with incomes up at poverty level, regardless of assets, they were also covered. So the effect of House Bill 369, passed in 1998, was, in a sense, a 67% increase in the eligibility level. And the senator from Fairbanks outlined the effects that that had in terms of numbers of people. If you look, I'm a percentage and change human being, that's what I look at. If you look at the percent of change in the total number of people on Medicaid from 1997 through 2003, it's a 34% increase during that period of time. If you look at the percentage change in the number of children that were eligible during Medicaid during that period of time, Mr. President, it's 65% increase. I just had to look and compare the demographics of that with other demographics to our children population in the state. So I went to the Department of Education, Mr. President, and I got the average daily membership counts, which is what the student formula is calculated across the state. So from 1997 through FY02, there was an increase, Mr. President, of 4%. So I went and looked at the birth rates between 1997 and 2002, Mr. President. The birth rate, Mr. President, has actually reduced about 0.5%, with a constant of about 9,970 births a year here in Alaska. So I said to myself, how can we get this increase, this huge increase in one constituency during that period of time? And it's a result of House Bill 369, which raised it up. Mr. President, the amendment that was offered by Senator Fairbanks takes it down to an original, takes it down 25%, but still a 42% increase over the federal poverty requirement to be eligible for that program for Medicaid. Mr. President, the comments have said that we get 30% for the state and 70% for the federal government. Well, we've been doing that for a long time in Medicare and Medicaid, and the problem is broken at the national level. And the more we pass off to the federal side, it just compounds the problem at the federal level. And the federal level knows there's a problem, and they're going through Medicaid reform. And they've actually come up with some compromises, some alternative methods of providing health care. One of those alternatives, we're, in our state, a major beneficiary for the safety net for the uninsured. And that comes through the Denali Commission. And the community health centers that the Denali Commission is constructing. It's funded by the Health and Resources Service Administration or the Public Health Service Administration Act, Mr. President. Currently, there's 49 community health clinics that are to provide high-quality, cost-effective primary and preventive care to the medically underserved and uninsured. And I know, Mr. President, that the community health center is to see all patients, regardless of ability to pay, regardless of rates, and they cannot deny service to anyone. There are currently 49 centers operating in the state right now, Mr. President, and with the Denali Commission information I received yesterday, they have an additional 218 sites under construction. So here's a mechanism that the federal government is saying, the Medicare, Medicaid system is broken. We're constructing a new system to provide health care and preventative maintenance to those that are uninsured. So, Mr. President, I support the amendment from the senator from Fairbanks. I support the bill. because if we don't fix it, we're not going to have a system in play to provide for those that really need the help. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Is there any further debate?
Would the Senate please come back to order? We were in debate on third reading. Is there any additional debate? Seeing none, the question before us is, shall committee substitute for Senate Bill 105, Hess amended, pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary will tally the roll.
12 yeas, 7 nays.
So by a vote of 12 yeas, 7 nays, committee substitute for Senate Bill 105, Hess amended, has passed the Senate. Mr. Majority Leader, the effective date.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move the effective date clause.
The effective date clause. Mr. Minority Leader.
We have an at-ease, please.
Brief at-ease. Would the Senate come back to order, please? Before the at-ease, we had a motion on the effective date clause. So the question, Mr. Majority Leader. Is a call on the Senate? Please. Senate, come back to order. The call on the Senate has been lifted. The motion before us is the effective date clause. Members may proceed to vote. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary will tally the roll.
12 yeas, 7 nays.
So by a vote of 12 yeas, 7 nays, the effective date clause fails. Mr. Majority Leader.
I move the Senate stand in recess till 5 p.m.
We are recessed till 5 p.m. When the Senate please come back to order. Senator Seekins.
President, I'd like to ask unanimous consent to return up to the introduction of guests.
Without objection, there is objection.
Could we have an at ease, please?
At ease. Back to order, please. Senator Seekins, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to introduce in the Ziegler Gallery Linda Witt, who is the president of the Tanana Valley League of Women Voters, and is board member of the Friends of the University of Alaska Museum and an elementary teacher at Pearl Creek School in the Fairbanks area. Please help me welcome her to the Senate.
That brings us back down to the daily calendar. We had finished on Senate Bill 105. Madam Secretary.
Senate Bill number 108, an act relating to payment rates under the Medicaid program for health facilities and to budgeting, accounting, and reporting requirements for those facilities, abolishing the Medicaid Rate Advisory Commission and providing for an effective date.
We are in third reading. Do we have debate? Seeing none. Need to take a brief at ease, please, Mr. Majority Leader. Senate, come back to order. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I put a call on the Senate, please.
There's a call put on the Senate. We'll take it at ease while we round up the... Would the Senate come back to order, please? Everybody needs to sit down. We'll see who's not here. I think everybody's here. That's everybody. Okay. We are on third reading, debate on Senate Bill 108. Is there debate? Seeing none, the question before the Senate is, shall Senate Bill 108 pass the Senate? Members may proceed. Senator Taylor.
I did want to note, just for the record, that it may be necessary to yet amend this, and I'm going to take that up with members of the other body rather than slow it down today. And part of my concern is that the Bourne Amendment, which provides for federal law for adequate and appropriate funding of facilities, was also eliminated from this. And to make certain that our hospitals have an opportunity for some due process within the rate-setting levels, I think it may yet take an amendment, and we may see that before the bill probably comes back. At this point, I'm going to withdraw any of those concerns and defer to the other body to do that cleanup. But I did want to note that for the record so that when people see this legislation coming back, if there are changes, that'll be, I think, one of the primary reasons for it. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no further debate, question before the Senate is, shall Senate Bill 108 pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary will tally the roll.
17 yeas, 2 nays.
So by a vote of 17 yeas, 2 nays, Senate Bill 108 has passed the Senate. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Move and ask unanimous consent that the vote on final passage be considered the vote on the effective date clause.
Without objection, the vote on final passage will be considered the vote on the effective date clause. Mr. Minority Leader.
Mr. President, I serve notice of reconsideration of my vote on Senate Bill 105.
Reconsideration on 105 has been given. Madam Secretary, the next item.
Senate Bill number 109 by the Senate Rules Committee, by request of the Governor, an act repealing the statute that sets priorities for the Department of Health and Social Services to apply to administration of the medical assistance program when there are insufficient funds allocated in the state budget for that program, authorizing the department to make cost containment decisions that may include decisions about eligibility of persons and availability of services under the medical assistance program, and providing for an effective date.
We are in third reading. Is there debate? Seeing none, the question before the Senate is, shall Senate Bill 109 pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary will tally the roll.
15 yeas, 4 nays.
So by a vote of 15 yeas, 4 nays, Senate Bill 109 has passed the Senate. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Move and ask unanimous consent that the vote on final passage be considered the vote on the effective date clause.
Without objection, vote on final passage will be considered the vote on the effective date clause. Senator Elton.
Mr. President, I give notice of reconsideration of my vote of Senate Bill 108.
On 108, reconsideration has been given on 108. Madam Secretary, the next item. Briefities. Senate, come back to order, please. Madam Secretary.
Senate Bill number 123 amended, an act relating to adoptions and guardianships that include a subsidy payment by the state, eliminating annual review of the subsidy paid by the state after adoption of a hard-to-place child has occurred or a court has appointed a legal guardian for a hard-to-place child, and providing for an effective date.
We are in third reading. Do we have debate? Seeing no debate, the question before the Senate is, shall Senate Bill 123 amended pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary will tally the roll.
19 yeas, 0 nays.
By a vote of 19 yeas, 0 nays, Senate Bill 123 amended has passed the Senate. Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. President, move and ask unanimous consent to vote on final passage be considered the vote on the effective date clause.
Without objection, the vote on final passage will be considered the vote on the effective date clause. Mr. Minority Leader.
Mr. President, I serve notice of reconsideration of my vote on Senate Bill 109.
On 109. Brings us down to the next item.
Senate Bill number 124, an act relating to grants for alcoholism and drug abuse programs and providing for an effective date.
We are in third reading. Is there a debate? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. President. I rise in opposition to this particular piece of legislation. First of all, I think that alcohol and alcohol abuse continues to be a major problem throughout our state, and particularly in rural Alaska. And I know the governor has made it a priority of his to prosecute bootleggers and others to the full extent of the law as possible. But many of the people that are incarcerated in our facilities have committed many of their crimes while under the influence of alcohol. And I know that we spent a lot of time on alcohol and alcohol abuse legislation in prior years, toughening up the laws. But for us to take the alcohol grants that are being administered today and require an increase from, I believe it's up to 25% from the 10%, is going in the wrong direction. I would say that this probably would be the right direction to go if we were seeing improvements or a decline in the amount of alcohol and alcohol abuse in our state. But sadly to report that is not the case. Another reason that I think that this is wrong is that if we are to continue to provide the same level of services, the local governments and or agencies are going to have to come up with the additional revenues. And as pointed out by the fiscal note, the fiscal note shows a $1.2 million fiscal note that would have to be picked up by local communities. Over a five-year period, Mr. President, this would be in excess of $6 million. And I would say that, as with other pieces of legislation, this one would just be passing on that financial responsibility to local governments and agencies that are already strapped. And as a result of this, I believe that the services that are being provided may be reduced. And if they, and I know there are provisions in here to have waivers if they cannot come up with the necessary funds. But in many cases, I believe that it will be difficult to prove that they cannot come up with those necessary funds. And we do have the list. We had went over this particular piece of legislation in the Finance Committee, and we have several pages, you know, of grantees throughout the state of Alaska. Many of them, we have the Bristol Bay Health Corporation that would have to come up with an additional $380,000 in order to get their grant. We have the changing council services in Petersburg would have to come up with $36,000. We have the Cook Inlet Council on Alcohol and Drug Abuse in Kenai that would have to come up with an additional $114,000. The Fairbanks Native Association in would have to come up with $140,000. The Juneau Recovery Hospital here in Juneau would have to come up with $110,000. In Kenai, the Kenaitse Indian Tribe would have to come up with $23,000. The Kodiak Council on Alcoholism would have to come up with $144,000. The Norton Sound Health Corporation, an additional $54,000. Search in Sitka would have to come up with $40,000. The Sitka Prevention and Treatment Services would have to come up with an additional $150,000. You know, and these are just very few of the grantees. You know, the list goes on and on and on. It would take me several minutes to read all of the grantees that would have to come up with these additional dollars. You know, and I might point out that the legislation does not require the suicide prevention to come up with additional dollars. They were exempt. But, you know, I think the problems that we have in the state regarding alcohol are just as severe as the problems that we're having with alcohol. In fact, they affect just as many, if not more, lives. And I believe that that this is not the proper area or the right area to tighten our belts, as I believe that we need to, if anything, we need to put more dollars into the program so that potentially once the abuse is addressed, we would be better served and all of Alaskans would be living in a safer place. With that, Mr. Chairman, I would encourage the members to vote no on this particular piece of legislation.
Further debate? Senator Wilken.
Thank you, Mr. President. When you read about this legislation, or have others perhaps talk about it that don't like it, they would have you believe that every alcohol grant in Alaska is being asked to come up with more money to stay in existence. The data that we saw at Finance would tell you differently. In these pages that the prior speaker spoke of, there's 167 programs across our state, and they go from the smallest village to the largest city, from $1.3 million down to almost nickels and dimes. It's an astounding number of programs, an astounding amount of money. But I should point out to you, Mr. President, that there were out of the 167 programs, 92 were held exempt from this legislation, exempted totally or exempted to stay at the 10% match as it is today. Furthermore, in the legislation, the department has the latitude to decide if a certain program cannot afford it, to come up with it, they can waive that on their own. I'll just let you know, Mr. President, that all of the community-based suicide prevention grants were exempted from the match. All of the DO corrections, domestic violence, education, were exempted from the match or held at 10%. All of the services for families, women with children, and services for families, youth, were exempted or held at the 10% for the match. If you look at the 75 programs that were asked to come up with more, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately for the programs, they're in those areas of the state that are larger, that have the ability to tap monies for their program
through local aid, or perhaps go to the federal government for additional money. So this was well-crafted legislation that helps us all understand that we must do more with less, and these programs need to come up with more money, perhaps, and there's a way to do that in those that are being asked to do so. Thank you.
Senator Elton.
Mr. President, I want to associate myself with the remarks by the senator from Western Alaska. I think it's clear. I mean, the fiscal note makes it clear. I mean, it tells how much less money the state is going to be paying. And I would just like to point out that the ability to tap other funds is nothing more than a euphemism. In my case, and I'm a former borough assembly member here in the community of Juneau, unfortunately, the ability to tap additional funds, as was just mentioned on the floor, too often means taxes. And so what we're doing is we're putting ourselves in a wonderful position. We get to say, well, we're not spending as much. And somebody else is going to have to say, well, we're not going to do as much. Or they're going to have to say, well, we're going to tax you more. And I don't think that's fair, especially when we're talking about something that is a tremendous cost in every community across the state. And if we don't invest in this problem, we're going to pay these costs forever and ever and ever. It's higher public safety costs, higher corrections costs, higher court costs. And I think that this is the kind of investment that we need to make so that we save money down the road.
Senator, Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I want to also support the remarks of the Senator from Bethel. He listed a number of programs across the state in some of the smaller communities. I want to bring an urban perspective to this discussion and explain my opposition to the bill. And those folks who share a representation of my community of Anchorage should get a heads up here. It's nearly $1 million hit by my calculation to the community of Anchorage. This is another Murkowski headache to Mayor George Wirtz that he probably doesn't want or need at this time. So please think about that. Nearly $1 million hit to programs in Anchorage. And it's obvious to anyone who's had any experience with substance abuse issues in the state legislature to realize exactly the point that the senator from Juneau made, that the senator from Fairbanks talked about the number of people in programs and dollars spent on drug and alcohol abuse programs in the state. Well, the figure that should occur to everybody is the size of the alcohol and drug abuse problem in terms of economic terms, tax burden to the local taxpayers. All of that, the problem of alcohol abuse and substance abuse in the state absolutely dwarfs the effort that we put forward. And many of us who supported the increase in the alcohol tax last session thought that we might be able to take a progressive step forward in our approach to alcohol and drug abuse in this state, that some of those revenues, a more significant amount of those revenues, that it wouldn't be standing in place, going backwards with baby steps, but that we would actually make a significant advance on the enormous financial cost to the state of drug and alcohol abuse. I note also, Mr. President, that the governor and his lieutenant governor have been speaking since their inauguration and even before about a faith-based initiative. I'm interested and excited about the prospects for that. But it is ironic, with cuts to the Human Services Block grant and now the cuts to these alcohol and drug abuse grants, that we have a faith-based initiative in this state. We have nonprofits that are associated with religious organizations, religious sects, who provide a number of social services. And in particular, in my community, the Salvation Army Residential Addiction Treatment Program is, as these kinds of programs go, quite successful. It's a well-respected program. I fear for the future of that program, or fear for the taxpayers at the local level in Anchorage. I don't know which more, Mr. President, but it's nearly $1 million hit to Anchorage. I think that's ill-advised. When you add that, my community's impact with the impact of communities all across the state, it does mean less service for this chronic problem in our state, or it does mean a greater tax burden at the local level. But either way, the outcome is not good from this legislation. So I would call on the governor and the lieutenant governor to really think about the faith-based initiative that we've got going between the public and private sector now through nonprofits that deliver very valuable services, including those that we're talking about in this bill for alcohol and drug abuse programs, that we have a good effort going, and to pull the rug out from under some of these programs that are associated with faith-based organizations I think would be a step definitely in the wrong direction.
Do we have further debate? Senator French.
Thank you, Mr. President. The story of my career as a criminal prosecutor can practically be summed up in one word, and that's alcohol. From the day I began working at the DA's office, I was trained by a somewhat cynical individual who'd been there for a couple of years, and the first words out of his mouth to me were, "Hollis, welcome to the land of the drunk and the stupid." alcohol drives crime in Alaska. Alcohol drives crimes from DWI to assault cases to sex assault cases to homicide cases. And making less money available to communities for their efforts to fight alcohol abuse is not good policy. That's why I'm going to vote against this bill. I urge the rest of you to join me in doing so.
Senator Bundy.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, obviously alcohol is a serious problem in Alaska, and if money were the solution, all the money we've gone through attempting to solve this problem, I think the problem would be smaller, not bigger. I don't think money is the only solution. One of the human foibles that we have to be aware of is that when people invest more of their own funds in a project, their expectations, their levels of demands upon their participants in programs that they fund goes up. So it isn't just that we need money, and it's not how much money. It's also where does the money come from? And can we, if we invest locally in our own program, expect better results because we will have closer scrutiny of those programs and the participants in those programs? I think the answer is yes, so I will be supporting the bill.
Further debate. Senator Olson.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Certainly with respect to this bill, I can think of no other abuse that has robbed both rural and urban, native and non-native personnel within the state than the abuse of alcohol. It reminds me, the only time that I can think in world history where you've had a worse abuse system was in China when the opium trade became pretty rampant back there 150 years ago. Their solution was to have capital punishment on the spot, almost in a vigilante-type manner. In this particular case, we have a more civilized way to go ahead and try and deal with the problem. But with dealing with that problem, we have to make sure that the facilities and the training that cost money are there. And many of these people do not have the ability to go ahead and pay for it.